Baron thought of what Esme had told him about the mutiny and what he'd heard of Harris Serrano's capture of Garavay's cruiser.
It doesn't take many to create havoc if they get command of the bridge.
All at once, the ship, which had seemed too large to be a ship, too safe to be interesting, felt fragile in the immensity of space. He tried to tell himself again that internal scan would find the intruders, but there were compartments without full pickup, and the volume of data alone would make it easy to miss significant details. That new AI system, which had already glitched on keeping up with the changes in the layout, could it really handle a job like this? Baron joined the line forming in front of a Kosciusko crewman wearing security patches. Ahead of him, others asked the questions he wanted answered, but the answers weren't coming.
Just looking here. Handprints there. I feel a pinch. Now move along.
Full ID checks.
Baron hadn't been through a full ID check since he entered the academy.
Could someone fake a retinal scan or handprint pattern?
Behind him, the line thickened. It was taking at least a minute to process each person and hand out a new ID tag. He occupied his mind with the obvious calculation, a max of 60 people an hour through each checkpoint, and they had 10 checkpoints. It would be hours and hours before they'd confirmed and issued new tags to the whole crew.
Look in here, sir, and your hands. You'll feel a pinch.
Baron blinked from the flash as the machine checked his retinal pattern. He felt a sharp pinprick as it drew his blood to check against his record. Baron took the bright pink tag they offered. Unlike his old one, it didn't have his picture, just the shiny strip that would allow Scan to recognize him as legitimate. Even as he walked off on his way to inventory for the parts Voorhees had wanted, he saw more security personnel arriving with more screening equipment. He took the tube up to Deck 13 and gave his request to the Master Chief, who was supervising the automated retrieval system. She did not have one of the new pink ID tags, but nodded toward his.
I expect the captain will shut down the automated system soon, and then I can go get my new tags. You're lucky you got here now.
Soon enough, one of the little robo-carts slid up to the door with his order. The Chief checked it off.
Do you need transport, sir?
Baron eyed the load.
No, thank you.
Fine, then.
Baron picked up the packaged components and decided not to take the tube back down. He could walk around the core, clockwise with the traffic, then take the ladder up to Deck 12 and be in the tech school's inventory for the other things Voorhees wanted. And he might see something.
If they are intruders and they are Blood Horde, what would they look like?
All he knew about the Blood Horde was that they favored tall blondes. As he passed the base of T5, he could see into the ship's security bay, which looked like a kicked anthill. Why couldn't he have been in the ship's own crew? He could imagine himself easily as that lieutenant of security, the one scowling at him now as if to wonder what an ensign from the 14th's remote sensing section was doing here. It would be a lot more interesting than his job. He wouldn't see any intruders or any enemy on the outside either. He strode on, wishing hives on the person who'd assigned him to scan on a DSR instead of something suitable to a Serrano. The school's inventory, when he got there, was empty. He leaned on the counter, tempted to stick his hand in the console and find out where the parts were that he wanted. It wasn't safe, really. If everyone was lined up getting UID tags, who was making sure the intruders didn't get into someplace like this? Although, why they'd want to... At the sound of footsteps, he felt his pulse quicken again.
Intruders?
Baron glanced around and saw nothing useful as a weapon. But the plump sergeant coming into view, his cheeks scarlet with exertion, wore a new pink ID tag.
Sorry, sir. I had to run up all the ladders. They've turned off the lift tubes just in case, which is ridiculous. It only makes more work for the rest of us.
Baron handed over his list.
Perhaps they're concerned that the intruders might cut the power to the lift tubes.
You don't think they would?
I don't know what they'd do, but if someone wanted to cause trouble, that's one way to do it.
Stupid. Let's see. Aisle 8, level 2, tray 13. Just a moment, then.
The school's inventory had never been automated, and Baron waited while the sergeant found his items and handed them over. Baron signed the terminal and headed back. Should he use the ladders here? T1 was probably less crowded. Or go on around and straight down in T3? He split the decision, dropping to deck 6, then going around core to T3 for the final descent to deck 4. Vokres had found the place, one of the maintenance shafts for the lift tube clusters, this one at the inboard junction of T3 and T2 on deck 6, on his way to the meal at which he'd picked up the disgustingly dull knife and fork now hidden under his jumpsuit. He'd found Metris again and passed the word. Metris would pass it on as he would.
How long do we have?
His blood sang with excitement, clearing away the dregs of the sleepy gas. This was nothing like the usual shipboarding, when they blasted their way in, weapons in hand, to take swift control of some fat, lazy trader. This was a real challenge. He wondered if anyone had noticed their weapons and equipment back on Wraith. They'd found the mine. That was common gossip, which they were glad to tell a presumed Wraith crewman.
It would have blown you to hell and back if our people hadn't found it and foamed it down.
But had they foamed the inner compartments too? If so, his favorite knives and tools might be safely embedded in the foam, and he could retrieve them later. It had been his grandfather's battle knife, too. He wanted it back. They needed weapons. He knew he could take any two or three of these effete technicians barehanded, but there were thousands of them. His whole team together could kill dozens, but it would not be enough. Somewhere on this monster ship were weapons of all sorts, hand weapons and ship weapons, ammunition, power packs, everything. He just had to find it. His supposed supervisor wasn't watching him closely. He walked off casually in the direction of the dumps. They called them heads for reasons he'd never figured out. Short for shithead, he assumed, which still made no sense. He felt eyes on him and glanced back to see his supervisor looking annoyed. The man shrugged as Vokres went on through the door. Inside were three others, a man and two women. Vokres eyed the women. The Blood Horde hired some female mercenaries, but they fought in all-female units. That was the natural way. Otherwise, men would think of nothing but rut day in and day out. He was thinking of it now, as the tall red-haired one was washing her hands. She looked into the mirror, met his gaze, and scowled at him.
Scowl all you wish. You'll be tossed at my spear before morning.
When they left, he explored the echoing space with its seamless hard floor, its shiny walls. He found two other doors. One opened into a storage closet, and one into a different corridor. He tested the top of the closet. He could get out that way if he had to, but chose to walk out the other door as if he had come in that way. Here, he would have no pesky supervisor watching his every move. He tried to remember where his pack second had been sent and thought of using the data wand.
Need some help?
Vokres managed not to strike, but his move was sudden enough that the man, older, gray-haired, stepped back, startled.
Sorry, timing's still off.
He gestured to his ID tag, which had the Wraith ship code on it.
Oh, I thought perhaps you were lost or something. That's a slow stream data port. If you want a quick answer to anything, there's a fast stream down there.
I would like to find the other survivors.
Vokres struggled to remember the names on the uniform tags.
Kamaho, Bremerton.
You know their numbers?
No, Vokres didn't know their mythical numbers that went with their mythical names. He shook his head.
Search on Wraith should get him.
The man put his own wand into a port a few meters away. Vokres noticed that this one had a double ring around it, blue and green. The one he had been using had a double band of yellow and green.
Here you are. I'll transfer it to yours.
He reached for Vokres' data wand, then snugged it next to his for a moment and handed the wand back.
Thanks.
The man nodded and strode off. Vokres looked at the display options and walked down the corridor as if thinking, looking at the names and duty assignments coming up.
Will that man remember me? Report me? Would anyone be expected to know about the color codings on the data ports?
He'd felt smug that he'd recognized a data port at all. Hoke was indeed in hull and architecture, in wing T3 and on deck 4. Vokres considered the distance and cursed to himself. What misbegotten, brain-dead fool of an engineer had designed this ship? It made no sense. A space station with an oversized drive, that's what it was, not a ship at all. He was wasting too much time hunting people, but he could hardly get on the ship speaker. Surely they had a ship speaker and call. He spotted another of his people lounging along, looking the picture of a lazy incompetent, and signaled him. Sramit wandered over, and Vokrace told him where to meet and that he would find Hoch.
Don't slouch like that. At least look like you're on business.
Sramit nodded and put on the character of earnest, hardworking dullness, as if he had pulled a mask over his head. And that was another thing lost in Wraith. Not only their technical expert and their weapons, but their tools and their special gear that included disguises and camouflage. Hoch, when he found him, was being chewed out by one of the Familius NCOs.
And you can take your sorry tale back to Commander Adarin's clerk and explain that Petty Major Dorian won't have you on the crew. Is that clear?
Hoch caught Vokrace's eye, but his expression of sullen incompetence did not change.
Yes, sir.
Get on with it, then!
The NCO, suppressed fury in every line of his body, stalked off down the passage. Hoch looked straight at Vokrace and nodded. He would kill that one when he found him again.
We have a place, Deck 6, in the port junction of T3 and T2, a maintenance shaft for the lift tubes. I've only two of our brothers so far. This thing is too big.
I'll go too. Do you know where they are?
Vokrace was able to repeat the trick he had just learned, mating his data wand with Hoke's to transfer the list of personnel locations.
We're going to be discovered soon. I can feel it. We don't fit in with these...
slaves.
Careful. We still have to do it.
In my sleep, pack leader.
Go, pack brother. Make one sweep clockwise. They all seem to go clockwise on the big passage around the core. And then meet. I want to make one trip as far up ship as I can get before they realize we're aboard.
Hoch's eyes gleamed and his arm twitched. He moved off to the left. Vokrace went across to the nearest cluster of lift drop tubes and shot upward. He had enjoyed the swift ride many times on his visits to Familius space stations. The Blood Horde had sufficient trouble with the technology of gravity control that they used lift tubes rarely, never for such distances. He didn't suppose it would take him all the way to the top, but there it was, Deck 17. He stepped out into the same wide, curving corridor, here less busy than down on Deck 4. He walked along briskly as if he knew where he was going. A bored guard stood at an opening that might lead to the bridge on the core side. Vokrace didn't try to look in. His shoulders itched. He knew he was being watched. He walked on, most of the way around the core, surprised to find no other lift tube clusters, as there had been on the lower decks. Did only one set come this far? He didn't want to go back past the first guard like someone who had lost his way. He came to another guarded opening. Here, the guard looked more alert, eyes shifting back and forth. Vokrace could see the bulge of lift tubes ahead, but before that was a wide opening into T2. It had the label above. And he remembered that the dining hall had also been in T2. He looked in and almost stumbled in amazement. The place was full of plants, green plants. He turned in through the door as if this was what he'd intended all along and felt the guard's attention drop from him like a heavy load. Beneath his feet, something that almost felt like soil cushioned his steps. He ambled along a path, seeing no one. Paths met the one he was on, diverged, wound around taller plants that made screens so that he could not tell how large this place was. The path ended abruptly in a waist-high wall of fake stone. He felt it and was sure it was molded. A path ran beside the wall to rustic fake stone steps to his left. Below was more garden, and one enormous tree rising up past him to end 15 meters over his head. Behind it, a rough-looking gray wall with patches of blurred white on which someone was splayed out as if for sacrifice, arms wide, legs stretched apart. As he watched, the figure heaved upward, lost its grip, and fell. Vokrace watched the fall, waiting for the satisfying thunk, but instead the climber jerked to a halt in midair and hung swinging. Now he could see the thin line looped far above and coming back to the hand of someone standing beside the wall. He started down the steps.
Well, the fleet plan is finally schooling their troops in hostile boarding techniques? But if so, why not have them in gear they'd need? Why practice in thin short pants and little rag-like shirts?